Class is in session. You're listening to Squat University by Dr. Aaron Horshick.
Let's go!
Now, let's start the show.
Hey, what's up, podcast listeners? Thank you so much for checking out today's show. This is episode 111 of the Squat University podcast. The goal with each and every one of these shows is to bring you as much value-packed content to help you move better in the gym and in life, decrease your body's aches and pains, and help you reach your true athletic potential. Today's podcast is sponsored by Barefoot Athletics. Here's the deal. If you want to lift big weights with great technique, you need the right shoe. And for those of you out there that like to lift in a flat sole shoe like a Chuck Taylor, you need to check out the Ursa shoe by Barefoot Athletics. They have a super wide toe box that allows you to naturally splay your toes out and use your foot like it was designed. No more cramming your foot into a narrow toe box and smashing your foot into an unnatural position. If you want to enhance your foot stability, your technique, your control, and eventually your performance, you need to check out this shoe. I've been lifting in them for most of my non-Olympic lifts for over a year now, and I just absolutely love them. They're extremely comfortable, and they're not going to break your bank like a lot of other lifting shoes out there in the market. Now, if you go on barefootathletics.com, and that's B-E-A-R, like the animal, and use the code SQUATU, you can get 10% off your order. And that's for anything on their website, including the correct toe spacers that I also wear every single day. And you can learn about those on my prior podcast, Why Your Shoes Suck with Dr. Ray McClanahan. Today's show is also sponsored by Ample. If you guys are like me, your day-to-day schedule is crazy busy. You don't always have time to sit down and eat a good meal after your workout. I usually have a protein shake and try to chase it with something like a quick bar, Greek yogurt, or anything else I can basically get down quickly before jumping right back into the workday. And then I find myself an hour later just starving. Ample solves this problem of not having enough time during your day to fuel your body optimally. They make a powder drink that comes in a bottle. You just add some water, shake it up before drinking. And check this out. Each bottle is 400 calories, including 25 grams of protein, 4 grams of sugar, 10 grams of fiber, and loaded with good fats and carbs from high-quality foods that you can actually recognize on the ingredient list, unlike other drinks on the market today. They even have a 600-calorie option. So if you need help keeping weight on and optimally fueling your body during your busy schedule, go to amplemeal.com, that's A-M-P-L-E, and use the code SQUATU for 15% off your order. The link is also in the show notes of this podcast. So on to today's show. Today's podcast centers around a conversation I had with two-time Olympian in the sport of Olympic weightlifting, Chad Vaughn. Now, Chad and I have collaborated on a ton of content over the last couple of years, a ton of Instagram videos for helping you correct technique and things like that, specifically in the Olympic lifts. Now, today we had a conversation all on squatting like an Olympic lifter. You're going to find out exactly what that means in the show. Get ready. It's a long conversation, but there's going to be so much value in this. So if you are an Olympic weightlifter, if you are someone that wants to dabble in any of the Olympic lifts, whether that's competitively with CrossFit or you just want to learn them for the first time, this is going to be a beneficial podcast for you. So get excited. Let's get to today's show. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for stopping by for another episode of the Squat University podcast. Today, I'm joined by Chad Vaughn. Chad, thank you so much for stopping by the show. For those out there who have been living under a rock for the past year and a half and haven't seen any of the content that we've put together and the amazing podcast we've done before, can you give people just a brief introduction for who you are and all the work that you do?
Yeah, for sure. It's been too long. You got to invite me back on more often for sure. There's plenty to talk about. But I'm a two-time Olympian from the sport of weightlifting. So an elite competitor for 20 years. I've even competed recently on the masters level. So I've done some pretty cool things there. Lucky that I've been able to continue doing that. I actually just turned 40 last year, going to be 41 here pretty quick, but been a coach in the CrossFit community, teaching weightlifting, most specifically, but also a CrossFit coach for over the past 10 years now. So just continually been doing that, seminars throughout the world, creating content, doing a lot of writing, as you know, and, just very incredibly thankful, to be able to have what I can call a job now. I can't even believe I can call it a job, but to kind of have a job and make a living for my family with talking about weightlifting all the time, man, it's amazing.
It's awesome. I love it. And I'm just going to say this for anyone who is following or listening to this podcast. If you enjoy Olympic lifting, if you are into CrossFit, you want to learn the snatch and clean for the first time, or if you're a seasoned lifter, you need to be following the work that Chad does all across social media. Oli Chad on Instagram is his handle. And then also Chad and I have been doing a lot of writing recently, blog-wise, that has been on his website, not mine, but on his website, VaughnWeightlifting.com. So if you are into learning about lifting, you need to check that out. And hint, hint, that is something that may be something even bigger in the future.
That's right. That's right.
So the idea behind today's podcast, though, is all centered on the squat, and specifically squatting like an Olympic lifter. Now, obviously, guys, when we talk about the squat, we think it's more generalized, but really, when we're talking specifically for the sport of Olympic weightlifting, specifically those who are doing cleans and snatches, there are very specific nuanced details that I think can really accelerate an athlete's performance if done correctly. So we're going to learn about why the squat, when done in a very specific way, can be so important for an Olympic lifter. So I guess my first question for you, Chad, is what does squatting like an Olympic weightlifter mean to you?
Oh man, Aaron, you know that that is a very tough question. It is really the question, you know, that that along with foot position. I mean, foot position and depth for the squat specifically. Yes, I'm a coach and teacher of the Olympic lifts, but those two things are everything to me. So knowing what we're going to talk about today, I'm terrified, I'm nervous, but I'm excited at the same time, even though it's something that I talk about all the time and spend the majority of my day every day doing in some way. But squatting like an Olympic lifter, you know, again, saying that foot position and depth is everything to me. And what I want to really talk about most today is depth and confirming the depth necessary for you to get the most out of your squats for the Olympic lifts. I will say that the majority of the athletes that I watch online, you know, through Instagram, they make a post. I know that their goal is to snatch and clean and jerk more weight. There's a lot of people out there doing that these days. When I see their squats, even a lot of the athletes on the elite level, they're cutting their squats short. And what I mean by short is they're not going to full depth. And what I mean by full depth is they're not squatting as low as they possibly can, as low as they're capable of with quality. And let me just make the statement here. The lack of full depth in the squat, full depth, true full depth, is a fundamental inconsistency for the Olympic lifts and of Olympic lifting training and of Olympic lifting teaching. It's something that not enough coaches are paying attention to. They're just allowing their athletes to put more weight on the bar. And I'm talking about within not only overhead squats and front squats, but in high bar back squats as well. We can back squat to a parallel depth. We can use a powerlifting back squat, yes, for certain benefits. But if you're an Olympic lifter, the majority or all of the back squats that you should be doing should be high bar, and they should be all the way down. And, you know, up front, I want to challenge the listeners out there to think about what depth they're squatting to. If you are specifically training for the Olympic lifts, if you want to snatch and clean and jerk more weight, and you're squatting to benefit your strength, for example, for those lifts, you should also be squatting for the benefit of mobility work. The only way that you're going to work your mobility is if you get to those end ranges as low as you can go. Also the end range of your ankle, bending your knee as much as you can. And you should be looking at it in a way that you're saying, I am squatting to prepare for the reception of my snatch and clean, right? And so this disconnect that we have in the community that I see so many athletes and coaches, you know, doing is they're squatting, their squat, if you pause in their lowest position, whether they're pausing in the bottom or not, if you pause the video in their lowest position in a front squat, back squat, or overhead squat, foot position and depth wise, it looks completely different than what their lowest position and the reception of the snatch and clean look like. So go take a look at your videos and see if they match up. We want them to match up, and we want them to match up in your lowest position. And the only way that that's going to be possible is if you are dictating that with your squat reps. You can't learn and get stronger in the bottom position by getting there with your snatches and cleans alone. It's got to be through the squat.
So basically, there's a difference between squatting deep and squatting like an Olympic lifter, in that the reason that we have become more efficient in the snatch and the clean and jerk over the last decades is people are literally learning to get as deep as possible, sitting their butt on their heels. And if we're not doing that exact same, getting that exact same depth with our back squat, with our front squat, we're essentially decreasing our potential performance long-term, because you're not, the Olympic lifter doesn't use the back squat as a method of competition. It is clearly right. only a method to enhance our strength for the purpose of improving your snatch and your clean and jerk. And yeah, like you mentioned, I see a lot of athletes that when they do a snatch or a clean, you can slow-mo their video and they're getting ass to grass. Their butt is touching their heels in that bottom position. Yet when you watch them do a back squat, they cut it short. It's still deep, very deep, but it's not full depth. It is not completely in that bottom position. And oftentimes athletes would therefore benefit if they're squatting 200 kilos to a deep depth, but not full depth, they would benefit probably from dropping that weight down to a weight that they can truly bottom out and then progress their strength in that manner, is what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. And I got to be honest with you, Aaron, you say that a lot that you see are deep, but they're just not as low as they can go. A lot that I see aren't even close. I mean, I'm extreme in this regard. Like, I'm very extreme with it, but to me, a lot of them aren't even close. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, higher level Olympic lifters. And when I say higher level, I'm talking about athletes that maybe they've competed on the national level for a while. Some may be close to international, you know, they're barely parallel. So they're not even passing for a powerlifting competition. They're not even passing the CrossFit standard. So this disconnect is big. And I don't know what the time frame is, but you know, from my perspective, what I've seen through the last 10 years as a coach is that we've gone a little bit in the other direction of not going low enough. So I think 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and not near as many athletes were doing the Olympic lifts. So, but the ones that I saw back then that I was paying attention to me, a higher percentage of athletes that were interested in being the best that they could be in the Olympic lifts were going all the way down. And now, especially the last 10 years, what I've seen is it's going in the other direction, because now I'm seeing so many elite lifters miss this fundamental principle. And here's the thing. Some of these elite lifters, when I say elite lifter, I'm talking about international level or close to it. They're getting away with it. And it means that they're on the elite level in spite of it. They're getting away with it. But there are some of them, again, if we talk about almost international or national level, but want to get international level, I see a lot of them cutting their depth. And if they did squat to full depth, maybe they would be able to get to the highest level, because it's missing. I'll tell you that looking back on my own career, understanding more about myself as an athlete, as an individual, just overall looking at my training and my abilities, if I wasn't squatting to full depth for all those years and I wasn't as strong and good in the bottom position as I was, I wouldn't have made it to the level that I did. I didn't have that type of talent. Yes, I had a certain extent of talent, but I would have been very limited. I don't believe I would have made it to the Olympics by squatting to a partial depth, you know, all those years and only getting to my lowest position in the snatch and the clean. And, you know, so what's happening is that we have athletes that are doing all these random things with their Olympic lifts through their squat. So for example, we have athletes that are squatting to, say, hip crease below knee. That's very common in the CrossFit world. And so, you know, they're interested in being the best they can in the Olympic lifts. And let's just take a CrossFit Games level athlete, because I see them as examples, and they're exposed, right? So we see a lot of them, all of us do. And so I see a lot of them doing all of their squats to hip crease below knee. We're talking about wall balls, thrusters, air squats, front squats, back squats, overhead squats. I see a lot of them even do pause squats, but they're pausing dead on hip crease below knee. And so if I watch them warm up in the snatch and the clean, they're very good at receiving the bar and stopping at hip crease below knee as they're warming up. And they'll even get to heavy weights because they've made that specific depth, that specific position very strong, and their body knows it. It's very familiar with it. But at some point, at different amounts of weight, at different percentages for each individual, they're going to, their receiving position is going to start to look different. So their feet are probably going to jump out a little bit wider and their butt is going to go a little lower. And then when that happens, the moment that happens, the more weight they put on the bar, then it changes another inch wider and another inch lower and another inch wider and another inch lower until they're buried in their lowest position. And the problem with that is that even though these, again, these elite CrossFitters are lifting a lot of weight, they're just talented enough to one where they're getting away with it. But now when they get to their true maxes in the snatch and the clean, their receiving position is more compensated than it would be if they would have trained that low position. So if they start going as low as they can, with the good foot position that they're already using or with the better foot position, if they need it, some of them and some athletes that I watch, you know, I don't ever see them in a low, in a true or very low position, in a position, say any lower than hip crease below knee. And honestly, what that tells me, Aaron, is that they're not snatching and cleaning anywhere near what they're capable of, because you want to be good enough with technique in the snatch and clean to where you're getting overhead and in your front rack position weights that force you into a buried position. Buried means, you know, your body can't physically go any lower, because the lower you can go, the lower your body goes, the more your body compresses. If you think about it that way, the bars should be compressing your body completely. Simple math will tell you that you have potential to get under more weight. So if you're not lifting right now the amount of weight that forces you into an extreme position, then you're not lifting anywhere near what you're capable of. So, you know, just using those as examples to say that, you know, when you're looking at lifters, when you're looking at CrossFitters, elite and otherwise, you're going to see them do varying things on the reception of their Olympic lift. So it causes a lot of confusion and misconception as to where we should be going, what we should be allowing depth-wise and position-wise in the receiving position. And then, of course, what we should ultimately be doing in our squats, right? So it's a confusing topic. It's tough, right?
Yeah. And I mean, just like what you said, I think a lot of times we see these athletes, because there's so much content being placed on social media nowadays, you have access to seeing a lot of the training of many great athletes. And a lot of these athletes are succeeding in spite of, not because of, right, their depth. And they're crazy talented. They're crazy strong. And do you think any of this has, I know I've heard criticisms from some outside of the weightlifting community. I know like Louis Sims has talked about before about how he would discredit Olympic lifters for not pursuing pure absolute strength as much in their training. So maybe nowadays we're seeing more people that are bringing in some of that more absolute strength training, which would be more so like in the powerlifting community, which again, right, it's for the end goal. But now that has sort of bled into a little bit more, and seeing some Olympic lifters train for that absolute strength, but not at the complete depth that they should be training with the end goal of being a better snatcher, clean and jerk.
Yeah, I agree. I think that has absolutely bled in, and, you know, I think it should have. I think there should be some of those components. We should be using information that we've learned, and I, as a coach, do the best I can to use information that I've learned from being in the CrossFit community, from powerlifting, from bodybuilding, as much as I hate to admit it, Aaron, and from CrossFit, to try to write these more complete weightlifting programs that are going to help people reach their potential. You know, there were certainly, when I look back on programming, you know, 10, 20 years ago, there's probably some holes in general in weightlifting programming. And I think that's gotten better. Mm-hmm. But we need both. We need both. We need both of this collaboration and combination of methods. Use what we can as Olympic lifters, from powerlifting, from CrossFit, from bodybuilding, from any other sport, or discipline that you can think of, strongman, if that's what you need to fill in a hole that you have. But let's stay centered around the basic fundamentals of weightlifting. Let's not stray away from them, and let's not overwhelm ourselves with those other things as well. And one of the bare bones basics that you need in weightlifting is to make sure that your bottom position, your lowest squat position, is flexible, mobile, and it's very, very strong. So when we talk about strength, yes, I want to get as strong as I can as an Olympic lifter, but I'm more concerned, as you know, Aaron, with how much I and the lifters that I try to help can back squat, front squat, and overhead squat, honestly, with a 5-second pause in the bottom, than I am with them going just down and right back up. So can you stabilize for 5 seconds at minimum, if not longer? Some of your training needs to be with longer than that, but as a test, can you stabilize with the weight that we have on the bar in the bottom for 5 seconds? And then can you stand up out of that position? Now, when we're talking about the bottom position, if we look at that as a support position, as a depth and a position that we should be bouncing and changing direction against within the clean and the snatch, I want your bottom position to be excessively strong. And what I mean by that is that I want you to have the ability to squat down with control, say in a front squat, and support, you know, 120 or 130% of what you can stand up with in the bottom for 5 to 10 seconds, whatever it is. Breathe and speak freely, which shows ownership of that position. And then you can dump it, right? And I'm not necessarily asking people to do that. I'm not necessarily saying that that should be a part of your training. I'm just saying it should be a capability that you have. It's a demonstration that I've done a number of times in my seminars. I'll squat down with more on the bar than I know I'm going to be able to stand up with that day, just to prove a point. And I'll hold it there for 15, 20 seconds, and I'll speak and teach at the same time. And then if I'm doing it with the back squat, I'll dump it behind me, but also do the same demonstration with weight that I can stand up with to prove that point as well, that, hey, I'm down here, I'm breathing and speaking freely for 20 seconds or whatever it is. And then I stand up out of the bottom. So strength wise, for the purpose of being the best that you can at the Olympic lifts, it's more important to be able to pause in the bottom and stand up. So your body is familiar with that bottom position, with that lowest position. It knows it. It's your default position. If you want to look at it that way, it's your default position when you're snatching and you're cleaning heavy, meaning that you're not going to think about it. It's just going to go there. It's just going to go there. It's going to use it no matter if you're maxing out, or for me, quite honestly, if I'm lifting the bar, my body's going to find that bottom position and bounce. You know, that's it.
Yeah. And I mean, this is something that I've firsthand realized in my own lifting. I mean, being in Olympic lifting for me, I started competing in 2005, and all the different coaches I have, none of them sort of took this exact approach. And I remember my best back squat I hit just a few years ago, 191 kilos. And I mean, there's no way I would have been able to sit in the deepest position possible in the way that you and me have been changing my squat a little bit,
right,
in the past couple little bit. It was a deep squat, but even then, if I look at it from the side, that 191 kilos, I was under parallel a little bit.
Yeah.
But it was not sit my butt on my heels fully in that deep bottom position. And it's the idea that, you know, if you want to improve your squat for just getting a bigger squat, do that. That's fine. If you want to be a power lifter and you want to squat big weight, obviously you don't need to go any deeper than a passing squatting competition. But if your goal is to truly be the best Olympic lifter and improve your snatch and clean and jerk, it's got to be lower. I think the hardest thing for a lot of people, first and foremost, is taking their ego out of it. Because let me tell you, to squatting the numbers that I am now versus what I was even a year and a half ago, it's a complete decrease. But I'm also squatting consistently deeper than I have my entire life.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like my snatch and my clean though have gotten much improved because I am constantly reinforcing that ideal bottom position. My feet are going exactly where they want to be. Cause that's what the big thing we see with a lot of lifters is in their bottom snatch position or their bottom clean position. When they hit that bottom position, and reverse out, that's often where we see a lot of mechanical breakdowns. Yeah. Is we see people's heels spinning, or their foot collapse over, knees collapse over, or their back will round a little bit. And it's always whenever they get in that very bottom collapse position with heavy weight, and they need that heavy weight to actually truly hit that bottom position, that's when the compensations come out. And if you can actually strengthen that bottom position with a ideal squat pattern and reinforce it, you see less and less of these compensations. So you see that clean reception and bounce out of the bottom every single time because you've reinforced it, not just through snatch and clean and jerk work, but through the squat. So in a sense, the squat work is also mobility, because that's the one thing that I've noticed with you. And for everyone out there that hasn't seen some of the updates, Chad has been actually programming for me for what now, since November, October it's now?
Been close to 6 months, because you're about at the end of the cycle that we started.
And the one thing that I noticed with the way you warm up with the squats that is totally different from everyone else is that, like, regardless of what my working sets are for the day, we always start with like 35% and then 50% and then like 60%, but with a 5 second pause on the first and the last rep of the set. And it just, I love that so much, because even though the weight is super light and I probably would have regularly started off much higher, by the time I get up to my working set, I'm just, you know, hitting that bottom position perfectly because I'm spending time in that loaded, fully compressed bottom position. So I feel like it's been a great help for myself feeling for a better bottom position and carrying over well to the snatch and clean and jerk.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what it's intended to be, is a teaching tool, a development tool, you know, pausing on those reps in your warmups. And even for some athletes through your working sets as well, if you're not getting it right, if you're inconsistent with the depth that I want you to get to, maybe we need to lower those percentages for your working sets, and maybe we need to pause on some or all of those reps. I've had athletes that pause on all reps for a phase just to teach them the depth that I want them to get to. And sometimes their warmups aren't 5 seconds. They have to be 10 seconds, because it takes that long to make them relent, right? To make them relax in the way, and we can talk about that word relax a little bit more here in a little bit, but to make them relax in the way that they need to really sink to their lowest position. So whatever amount of time I need to give them for a pause, up to whatever weight and how many reps, to teach them that true full depth, if the Olympic lifts are their goal to best benefit their Olympic lifts, then that's what we're going to do. But it's certainly helps, as you said, athletes learn that bottom position and to give them a better chance to use it all the way through their squats. And because where I want them to get is to the point to where they can squat almost as much with a pause as without. That's where, you know, I got it, maybe 5-10 kilos at the most, probably usually not even 10, was the difference in the amount I could front squat, back squat, or overhead squat when I paused versus when I didn't, because I was getting to the same depth no matter what. And the only reason I could squat slightly more is because I was able to use that bounce out of the bottom that you get, or that you should be getting when you go all the way down. That's and crazy. Change direction against that bottom position, you know. And my squat numbers, just for the way that I was, because I was squatting all the way down, my clean numbers were very close to my squats. My back squat was very close to my front squat. At the most, my back squat was only ever 20 kilos more than my front squat. Most of the time, it was only 10. My clean was up as high as, I remember when I broke the American record at 190, 190 kilos, 418 pounds. Any reason to tell that story there, Aaron, by the way. But my front squat, you know, just a few weeks before that was 190 for a double. And I did 190 clean and jerk in that competition a few weeks later to break the American record. So it's because I was going all the way down. I wasn't squatting to a parallel depth. I wasn't front squatting or back squatting to a parallel depth or just below parallel, and then doing a clean with a completely different depth. If I would have done that, and if I would have got strong through that range, maybe I would have squatted more, but that didn't matter to me as an Olympic lifter. It wasn't going to benefit me. You know, as you mentioned, we have these athletes that are compensating in certain ways when they do get all the way down in the snatch and the clean. And hopefully it's obvious by now that it's because they're only getting to that true depth, that full depth within their snatches and cleans, and not at all with their squats. So you get very strong in your squat with all the reps that you do, with all the weight that you put on the bar at whatever foot position and depth that you go to, which is great, but it's also dangerous if it's not being done in a certain way, in a quality way, you know. And we need to talk about that too, because I hear it a lot, right? Athletes out there, they're going to be thinking, well, I can't squat all the way down with the quality that I need. I have a butt wink, for example, or whatever it may be. And I get it. It's something that we need to pay attention to. It's something that we need to consider. But a big problem that I have coming out of the community is when athletes and coaches say, you know, for example, a coach is watching a line of CrossFitters squat, right, in class. They're back or front squatting, all right? And the coach is watching very closely, and he's going down the line, and he says, okay, stop. He's telling them to stop at a certain depth. No, you went too low on that one. You're backgrounded or whatever it may be. Like they're very trained to see hip crease below knee. They're trained to see butt wink. They're trained to see these certain things. And they're very meticulous about that with the squat, whatever variation of the squat they may be. A couple of days later, Max Clean and Jerk comes up in CrossFit programming, just using CrossFit for an example. And they're okay now with the compensations that are happening in those heavy cleans. These athletes are getting to a completely different depth. Their feet are jumping out and turning out to a completely different foot position than they're squatting with. But for some reason, the compensations that are happening there, they're okay with. So what I'm saying is that don't come to me and say that I'm not going to squat lower, or I'm not going to let my athletes squat lower because I'm looking for these things, but then allow them to clean heavy where there's a lot of compensation, right? Again, it just goes back to that big disconnect. And really, in telling that story and giving that example, I want to challenge the listeners to think about that. Do you fall into that category as an athlete or a coach? Are you, you know, being picky and meticulous about squat depth with squats, but not in the snatch and the clean? And if the athlete can't clean, for example, and go all the way, be driven down to a bottom, an extreme low bottom position without compensation, and they can't do it in the squat either, well, you have to take both of them away then. You know, you have to take the heavy cleans away from them. But at the same time, what I want you to change is, instead of saying, I'm going to stop them short, let's figure out why they can't squat all the way down with good quality, and let's do some work on their mobility, giving them a different cue, doing a certain drill with them to teach them how to maintain the appropriate tension through their core and still be able to go all the way down. There's so many different things that we can look at and drills that we can implement, and mobility drills if they need it, to help them develop and make change to be able to squat all the way down, to then be able to do those heavy cleans where they're going to go all the way down no matter what, and still maintain better quality, right?
Definitely. So I will bring in a little bit of mobility into this next answer, but I'd love to hear from you first. What are some of the things that you see from your standpoint that limit that quality depth without compensation? Like you mentioned, you got the line of Olympic or the CrossFitters up, and the coach is stopping people at the spot at which they think is their depth that they should squat to. They shouldn't squat any deeper because they have compensation. What is the often faults that you find you can quickly fix to see a better squat depth?
Yeah. Let me say a couple things first, Aaron. I've come across a lot of people as a coach. I really have. I mean, I've done Power Monkey Camp almost 15 times now. In each Power Monkey Camp, you know, a lot of them, we've had 100 participants. Some of the earlier camps, when it was just growing, they were less, but probably on average, you know, around 70 people. So for 15 camps, and, you know, most of those weren't repeats. So most of those are different. So that's an accumulation of over 1,000 different people that I've looked at there. through over 10 years, I've done, you know, not so much in the last year and a half because I stopped traveling, doing seminars for some reason. I don't know why that would be, but, you know, on average one seminar per month where I worked with a different group of people, usually a different group of people each time, worked with a lot of people online. So I'm just saying that I've seen a lot of athletes, and yes, there are some with major limitations, but most of them that I come across, and I want to try to give this the most honest percentage that I can. And just in that regard, let me say a conservative 80%, and that's very conservative. I really believe it's more than that. Mm-hmm. By taking them through a full range of motion squat progression, by teaching them how to brace appropriately, by implementing certain drills that I do within that progression, I'm able to get most people to squat all the way down to their lowest position and still maintain quality. And usually that's barefoot. So what I'm saying is that if they can do that barefoot, I know that they can do it with their weightlifting shoes on, right? Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure that that's clear first. Like, we're not talking about a large number of people that really need to completely stop everything that they're doing and just work on mobility. Like, it's mm-hmm. not, that's just not reality. It's usually nothing other than a matter of before mobility drills. I'm not saying that I don't give them a lot of mobility protocols. The majority of them I do, because I want to perfect their bottom position. Now I want to make their bottom position and their squat better. So absolutely, we look at their mobility and we give them those protocols to improve over time and make that even better. But also before we get into that, I want to confirm a little bit more, what this depth is and how you get there and how do you know you're in your lowest position. So I want to go back to that word relax, and maybe relax isn't the right word to use, but it's just a habit of mine. It's a habit of mine to say, I want you to relax in the bottom, because really when I'm sitting in my bottom position, even if I've got heavy weight on the bar, if I'm doing a 5, 10 second or 20 second pause squat, I'm relaxed. I'm literally relaxed and I'm chilling. I'm breathing freely. I can talk if I want to, because I coach that way a lot, just as a demonstration. But yet at the same time, I am engaged through my core is engaged. I'm braced through the bottom of my stomach. My back is not rounding. I don't have a butt wink. But I'm sitting all the way down. So I want you to think of the word relax, and specifically, when you're in your lowest position, your quads should not be working. So specifically relaxing your quads, disengaging your quads is another good word, disengage, right? But another way to look at it is literally sitting down. So what I mean by that is if you sit in a chair, which, hopefully you guys don't do a whole lot of, right? That'll ruin you, right, Aaron? Yeah. But if you're sitting in a chair with good posture, with your feet on the ground, what's holding you up? The chair is holding you up, not your quads. Your quads aren't engaged. They're relaxed. You're sitting down. And so that's how you know you're in your lowest position, is you're sitting down on your in ranges. So what's holding you up? Your in ranges are holding you up. The in range of your ankle, the in range of your knee. You're bending your knee as much as you can. Your quads are turned off. The key here is that we want you to have good posture there. So I can sit in a chair with good posture, which I'm trying to do right now because I'm talking about posture, right? So I'm sitting here with extra good posture here, Aaron, like perfectly upright torso, back is flat, everything is locked in the way that it needs to be. But when I'm working throughout the day, absolutely, I'll get lazy and my shoulders will go forward, my back around, and I'm just typing away on the computer, right? So I don't want you sitting on your in ranges with bad posture. I want you sitting on your in ranges with good posture. And the way that you do that is through practice, through certain, different, you might need different cues. We might need to experiment with the cues that we're giving you to help you maintain that pressure in the bottom of the stomach that we want. And, or you may need extra mobility work to give you a better chance to be able to do that. The better your overall mobility is, the more easy you'll be able to maintain that core tension and breathe and speak freely and own that bottom position the way that we want. But absolutely, when we talk about mobility, what are some of the most common ones that I see? Well, going back before mobility, one of the one of the issues is where people are putting their feet. I'll try not to dig into that too much, Aaron. Well, that's a completely different recording, right? But you know, if you're just as an example, if your feet are 3 inches outside of your shoulders and your toes are turned out 45 degrees, well, everything up from your feet are going to be compensated and your feet are going to be compensated. Your feet aren't going to be very stable in that position. And you, so you're going to be more likely for your knees to cave in and for everything up from that point, like I said, to be compensated. So we have to pay attention to your feet. And when I go back and when I gave that example of around about 80% of the individuals I can get into a good position in their lowest position, that is with their feet in what I call a testing stance of shoulder width and straight ahead. Shoulder width and straight ahead, this what has become a no-no position, right? No, not everybody can use that. Well, when I say that I get people in that position, I'm able to do that with most of them with that specific, what I call testing foot position, mm-hmm. barefoot. And again, if you can do that, I know that you can put your weightlifting shoes on and maybe adjust your feet outside of that a little bit if you want, right? Mm-hmm. But in that position with that foot position standard or something around about in that range, ankle mobility, of course, is got to be number one. And you're going to say the same thing, Aaron, but I hate to repeat that because I know that you've said it so many times, but it's just the reality. So many athletes are limited with ankle mobility. And what a lot of times goes along with that, something that I learned from you just within these past couple of years that I've been using like I drink water. I mean, I just use it all the time now. Look at it on people and see that it's missing on so many athletes, and I'm able to give them some drills and make change there is tibia rotation, their ability to rotate their tibias. And sometimes what I learned from you is it's mobility, but more often than not, it's just a matter of control, like learning to use your tibias the way that you need to. And so if your ankles and your tibial rotation are both messed up, then you've got double trouble. And then if your hip, your internal hip rotation is messed up, you've got triple trouble. And those are probably the three most common that I see that when I test people are limited and that I give drills and mobility protocols to help them improve in that regard.
Definitely. So I do want to go back for a second and just explain when you say that the disengage the quads and completely relax in the bottom, the one thing that I think really helps people understand this is if they sit in a deep squat throughout their day, like actually rest in a deep squat, because here's the deal.
Yeah.
If you ask, and again, if you're listening to this, think about how often throughout the day are you sitting in a deep squat? And most people, they're like, I warm up, I'll do some deep squats and pause down there with the goblet squat. But they don't actually sit in the bottom of a deep squat throughout their day. It's not a resting position. So the more and more I do this, and I've been doing this for years because of what I first saw with Kelly Starrett and the 10-minute squat test, which again is genius, because the idea is we are using that bottom position to rest. And when you do that, you're not so tight. Like you have, 400 pounds in your back, because that's, again, the difference between a powerlifting squat or just someone who's squatting to be physically fit, to get very strong, and an Olympic lifter who is trying to have that bottom position be a legit full depth bottom position, completely, disengaged as far as what is holding you back restraint wise. And when you can sit down body weight throughout the day and really express that full depth motion, mm-hmm. and take some breaths. So I challenge everyone who's listening to this, what I want you to work on, and the idea behind Kelly's 10-minute squat test was to say, cumulative throughout the day, can you get 10 minutes just sitting down there?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, sometimes I'll just squat down. If I'm folding clothes, folding laundry, I'll literally sit down in the squat and I'll start folding. At first, like if you've had if you're sore from the day before, like it's tough. Your first couple, you grab a shirt and you're like almost falling over. But then all of a sudden you're like, okay, I'm getting a little bit more relaxed. And what I like to do is I pair that back and forth with the kneeling stretch, where you put the top of your feet straight down and sort of sit back on your heels and then go back and forth. That way we're getting a little bit of stretch into plantar flexion and then dorsiflexion back and forth. But what I notice is that the more and more you get comfortable just sitting in that full depth bottom position, the quads are, they're on. They're not just relaxed completely, but you are in a stacked position. Your joints are completely stacked one on top of the other in the mechanical way that your body best supports load. So in that instance, these small muscles that are often so engaged to maintain structure don't have to be doing it as much as possible, because biomechanically, alignment-wise, your pelvis, your femur, your tibia, your foot structure are all stacked in the most optimal structure. So if we were to think about things like a radio tower, tower has to have a number of different guy wires constantly taut in order for that to stay upright. If not, the next wind that comes through is going to blow it over. Well, when we look at like your pelvis to femur to tibia to foot, think about it more like an arch. And if all the pieces, an arch, maybe, I don't know, when we were in St. Louis, we have the St. Louis Arch, right? And when you go to the St. Louis Arch, they actually have this thing for kids where you basically have a bunch of these like foam pieces. Like if an arch was in 15 pieces and you stack them all together, and if they're all connected together, you can walk away and the arch is going to stay up. So there's 15, 20, you know, stackable pieces of foam. And the idea is that there's nothing else supporting it but the pieces that's all aligned together. And if you look at your lower body, if you are technically sitting down in the ideal alignment, you don't need a lot of other supporting muscles constantly engaged to provide stability for the structure, because your body is aligned in that most stable position. So I think sitting down often throughout your day and learning how to feel comfortable down there allows you to then take that and translate it over to the squat. And then again, like we said, using things in your warm-up, like, all right, today I'm going to squat up to 80%. Well, first thing, let's put 30 to 40% on the bar and let's do a couple reps where we're legit pausing for 5 seconds in that bottom position and feeling for being completely relaxed in that bottom position in the same way you were with the bodyweight squat. Now your core is still engaged. It's, you know, because we want our back to be, we want to have those guy wires off the radio tower still up, but we can get into that bottom position and relax all of the small supporting muscles that are technically trying to hold up the arch. I guess that's a way to think about it analogy wise that may make sense for some people.
Yeah, but, absolutely. Can I add to that real quick? Yeah. Because I'm glad that you brought that up. And I think the, what is it? The 10 weight or the 10 minute squat test. Is that right? Accumulate 10 minutes.
And
that is incredible. That is a huge step in the right direction. I want to give a little bit of warning on that though, because I've had a lot of athletes come to me and said, hey, I'm doing the 10 minute challenge. I'm like, oh, awesome. Great. This is going to help you learn that depth that I want, because you're absolutely right. It will. And so, you know, for the ones that I was working with, it's like, send me a video of not the 10 minutes, like if you're holding it for a full 10 minutes, but show me a video of the portion of it. And most of the time it's very compensated. So one, that's why I say, I think it's a good start. It's a good start. But at the same time, if you are holding for 10 minutes every day with your feet 3 inches outside of shoulder width, 45 degree turn out of the toe, knees caving to the inside, and your back is rounded, well, even though you are doing some benefit because you're working some mobility, because you're at an in range, and you're learning to, you know, disengage the quads the way that I want you to, you know, it could possibly be doing more harm than good. So the some adjustments that I've made to that for some athletes, because I love to use progression on anything that I do. And we talk about progressions in weightlifting all the time. We teach with progressions. But what I mean with progression, I'm talking about trying to help someone improve their mobility. I don't think progression is used necessarily enough. And especially if you're combining it with a full depth squat, because I'm absolutely using your full depth squat as a mobility tool, you know, through your general warmups and through the actual squats that you're doing. So these couple people that showed me those videos, I said, well, why don't you, for the next week or 2 weeks, and I'll help you make these decisions, elevate your heels 2 inches, right? And then once we see some competency and some consistency, we can progress that elevation down. I want, you know, even if you're doing it barefoot, which I'd prefer you do it barefoot, let's still elevate those heels with some plates or whatever surface that you can find, because, you know, it takes that much elevation or however much elevation we need to apply to get them to a lower position, not only a lower position, but a lower position with a better foot position and with better overall quality. And some athletes, it's going to take a certain amount of elevation for them to be able to relax their quads in the way that I want. You know, if your mobility is such, locked up, say again, ankles, tibia rotation, hip rotation is all really, really locked up, you're probably not going to be able to get to a depth that you can relax those quads. So you're like, probably you're trying this right now and you're like, oh, I don't know what they're talking about. I can never get into a squat and relax my quads. Well, if you elevate your heels, you may be able to, it may give you a better chance. But again, it's not about having you elevate forever, having you wear a belt forever, having you wear wrist wraps forever because your wrist was hurt. Let's don't get into that. Oh my goodness. You know, let's use those things as tools to help you get through a phase of your career, of your journey, and then progress out of them and off of them. Now, elevation, to be honest with you, is something that I still use as an athlete to this day. I'm just always progressing out of it through my warm-up, right? And I would recommend that for someone else as well who's trying to learn a fuller depth squat, who's trying to improve your overall mobility through the squat, which you should be doing. Use elevation, elevate your heels and progress down through the day and or just over a long period of time. So again, as an example, that individual that was doing the 10-minute squat challenge, just throwing 2 inches out there as an example, let's start with 2 inches for a week. If everything looks and feels good, then next week, let's go down to an inch and a half and let's see if we can continue progressing down. You might get to a sticking point to where you may have to go up and back down and play with it and go back and forth. But use the same concept just with your general warmups as well, not just that 10-minute challenge. And another couple ways to help you confirm this depth. Sorry, Aaron, I've got a lot of this stuff just because it's why I've got to play tricks on, on people all the time to get them where I want to go. But, I've already talked about weighted pause squats and long pause squats, but if you're having trouble getting this concept, I may have you pause in the bottom of a back squat or a front squat and I'll say, all right, I want you to squat down and hold your bottom position until I tell you to come up. Like, well, how long? Well, I don't know. It depends on how long it's going to take you to relent the way that I want, right? So it may be 10 seconds. You may fatigue enough to where you finally give up with those quads and relent in the way that I need you to get all the way down. It may be 20 seconds and maybe 30 seconds, but at some point, you're going to give up that fight, right? You're going to relax in the way that you need to relax. And an interesting correlation here, I find athletes that have the most high-strung personality, they're the hardest ones to get to give in the way that I want, right? So maybe you might need to go to a therapist to work through some of your life issues to be able to relent and get into a full-depth squat. I don't know. Some people just give me a hard time. But another thing that I've done is what I call inside-out Tabata air squats. And a lot of times I'll start my seminars in this way just to prove this point from the very beginning. Say, okay, guys, we're going to move around a little bit just to get your blood flowing and your mind ready to listen to me for a while. But the inside-out Tabata air squat is, if you know what Tabata is, it's you work for 20 seconds of whatever movement you choose to use, and you rest for 10 seconds, and you do that for 8 rounds. So it's 4 minutes total. So inside out is that we work for 10 seconds instead of 20, and we rest for 20 seconds. Okay. And we're going to do this with an air squat. So you're going to do 10 seconds of air squats, and then you're going to rest for 20 seconds, but you're going to rest, quote unquote, in the bottom position. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so what I see with this all the time, even with, you know, most of the people that come to my clinics are CrossFitters. You're very conditioned and you're very tough. So you know, you take to the very end to get where I want you to go, but either somewhere fourth, fifth, sixth, or seventh round of that, I see a complete difference in the depth that you started with when you were pausing for those 20 seconds, because you've been holding yourself up for 20 seconds for 5 or 6 or 7 rounds. And finally, you give up and you go to the dip that I want because I've fatigued
like
you
that.
Or I've annoyed you so much. Right. But again, just a few more examples there to get people to understand what it really truly means to squat to full depth.
Yeah. I mean, I like that because technically if you are not using that full depth bottom position, like you should, I mean, that 20 seconds is not a rest. It's an active 20 seconds. It's active 20 second pause squat to where you are completely supporting yourself. Your muscles are completely engaged.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if not, then you are fully supporting by your joints, by your bones, mm-hmm. And you're allowing your body to relax in between. So yeah, I like that. That can be a really great tool for some people.
And that's actually the question that I ask when I bring everybody together. I let them catch mm-hmm. their breath for a second, but you know, I say on a scale from 1 to 10, how hard was that? And you know, most of them never really say, it's not only a few ever say 10, but mm-hmm. they're usually somewhere in the middle, somewhere 6 or 7. And you know, what I tell them is that it should be almost a waste of time for you. Now, I mean, to be honest with you, like it's a good warm up no matter what.
Yeah.
But what I mean by waste of time is that on a difficulty level, it's easy. Like it's mm-hmm. it's like, because if I'm doing that warm up, I'm spending most of that time just completely relaxed in that bottom position. And 20 seconds isn't an extreme amount of time. The 10 seconds I get to go up, back up and down with air squats is just, you know, good recovery from, you know, pausing in that position. It allows me to do it easily for another 20 seconds. So it should be almost a waste of time. It should not be difficult at all. It should be a 1 out of 10 at the most, right?
Yeah. So we did talk about a little bit of mobility. So for those that are listening to this and want to improve their mobility for sitting in that bottom position, two of the most common things right off the bat, ankle mobility for sure is the most limiting thing, which I've talked about in depth in many different podcasts and videos before. For anyone that is listening and wants to, again, go over those, my YouTube, Squat University YouTube, just type in top 3 ankle mobility exercises. And it sort of walks you through how to do band and joint mobilizations. And then a couple other very squat specific movements. But the idea is that as we improve ankle mobility, we get more knee over toe translation, which again is not a bad thing, because if knees over toes was bad, someone needs to alert the millions of weightlifters all over the world, because they're going to have blown knees in the next couple of years.
Yeah. And they all have the strongest, healthiest knees in the world, by the way, exactly. Because they've done that for so long.
Exactly. But more knee over toe translation we can get, which means you can get your hips to a deeper position with your trunk more upright. So ankle mobility is mm-hmm. key. And the reason why weightlifters wear weightlifting shoes, because a weightlifting shoe with the raised heel stimulates a little bit more knee over toe translation for the movement pattern that you have. So that would be the first one. The second one is tibial rotation. Now, this is something that I've just really been getting into a lot more within the last year and a half. And what I've found is that a lot of people who lack ankle mobility often have limited tibial rotation as well. Now, for those of you out there, what I would do is go on my YouTube, again, Squat University YouTube, and check out, just type in tibial internal rotation. I have a video with my famous model, Ed, who's my PT buddy, who I constantly use him for showing poor retro version and poor squat depth. So he hates it whenever I'm like, hey, Ed, you coming over for another video? He's like, it better not be for my hips again. I'm like, but it's such a great example. What happens is that when you squat down, your femurs are moving into relative external rotation and your tibias are internally rotating. So they are almost unscrewing, I guess is a good way to think about it when you're squatting down, and they are tilting to the side. So you need a sufficient amount of tibial internal rotation for the ankle and knee joints to unhinge basically, and to allow yourself to get all the way down. So if you have one side, let's say you have a stubborn right ankle and you've been doing all the ankle mobility work that you have seen and it's just not improving, I would also check tibial rotation. And sometimes it's not necessarily a mobility issue, but actually more of a neuromuscular control, or basically your ability to own that movement pattern. And there's a very specific drill that we use with a band. You can see it in the video or on some of the blogs that Chad and I have done. And it can really improve tibial rotation. And in many people, I've got a recent patient case documentation that I'm going to put up on Instagram very soon. So hopefully by the time this podcast is published, you can see that. But this kid had limited ankle mobility, specifically on one side that was leading to a lot of hip issues. And we tested it, and then we tested his tibial rotation. And all we did was this one drill to improve his tibial rotation, which then improved the motion. And we didn't even touch his ankle with the traditional ankle mobility exercises, and he got better knee over toe translation. So showing that some people, they keep on sort of banging their head against the wall. They're like, I do all this ankle mobility work and it's not improving. Well, sometimes it's not necessarily a mobility issue. It's a control issue with tibial rotation that can then unlock that ankle and allow you to squat a lot deeper. So the one last question I wanted to touch on is battling anatomy. Now, the one thing that I do see every once in a while is the case, and while it may be rare to a point, it's still, there's some people out there that have a good amount of femoral or acetabular retroversion in their hips. And for them, they do need to toe out a little bit more in order to squat. How often have you found that in getting that full depth squat that they need to toe out a little bit? I'll say for myself, I've got a little bit of retroversion. So when I'm squatting, I probably have about a 15 to, if I'm doing a full depth squat, like we talked about now, I'm maybe about 20 degree toe out angle. So I actually have a more exaggerated toe position now than I did years ago when I was squatting heavier, but I was also not squatting to my true Olympic lifting potential. So I'm sort of accommodating myself to a little bit more of a toe position. Again, not nearly like 45 degrees like we see some people, but how often have you seen that in all the different assessments that you've done over the years?
Yeah. So would you say, going back to your squat right now, going back to the all the back squat, barefoot back squats you've been doing, would you say that your feet are at 20 degrees out right now?
Yeah, I'd say probably about 20 degrees. Yeah, I'd say it's definitely a little bit more, but I even had my wife the other day, just because I was going over this in my head, I was like, can you just check my hips again and do an Craig's test? And she's like, yeah, you're, you know, fairly retroverted. Now, it's not an extreme case, but I have a little bit more retroversion than I do a neutral position.
Yeah. So from my perspective, and you know, here's the thing. Again, I'm extreme. Like, honestly, I am probably more at the level of a Kelly Starrett on this, which by the way, we just had him on the USA Weightlifting podcast yesterday. So between talking to him yesterday and you today, like I'm inspired and motivated, man. I think my coaching is going to be at another level for a while from talking to you guys back to back. But I'm on the extreme side of that. And I'm not a PT, though Kelly Starrett is, right? I have not specifically tested for hip anatomy very much. I've tested hip internal rotation mobility a lot, like over and over and over again. And you know, it, I guess I can say it's my opinion that most people can develop into a straight foot or a straighter foot ability to squat. And I have a number of reasons and, you know, things to say that, that I think can back that up. But, kind of lost my thought there. What I was saying with that is, as far as specifically hip anatomy, most of the people that have come to me and said, you know, I've been told that I have an anatomical variation in my hip, whatever that may be, and I need to squat a certain way. I need to, you know, again, have my feet 3 inches outside of shoulder width and at a 45 degree angle. Most of them, 90% of the time, if not more, have limited ankle and tibial rotation.
I would agree.
So don't, you know, argue with me about your hip anatomy if you have some changes that you can make with your ankles and your tibia rotation, because your ankle and tibia rotation can make up for your lacking hip anatomy a tremendous amount. I think that's far more the answer than hip anatomy. And the reason why I think that is because I've done what I call stupid weightlifter tricks for my whole career. And I still do them to this day. And I use them to teach with as examples. And one of them is squatting either with weightlifting shoes on, barefoot, it doesn't matter, with my toes turned in, you know, 15 to 20 degrees.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you should do your weighted squats that way, but I have the ability to squat heavy weight, pause in that bottom position. And just like we talked about before, with my toes turned in, I'm not going to do my squats that way. Right. But I am going to warm up that way. What that means is that I'm exaggerating my foot position to warm up my body and to prepare my body for, again, that snatch and clean reception. Because if I can get more and more comfortable barefoot with my toes turned in, just by doing some reps in my warm-up, by exaggerating to that extent, then I'm very confident that my feet and my body aren't going to compensate in my heaviest snatches and my heaviest cleans. Mm-hmm. And going back to anatomy, I don't know what my hip anatomy is. Let's just say that it's normal. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Is it, maybe it falls into the range of normal. Mm-hmm. If with my normal hips, I can do some exaggerated squat warm-up reps with my toes turned in that amount, I'm confident that anyone can do some squat warm-up reps with their toes straight ahead. And that's going to do nothing but benefit their overall ability. So even if you do have anatomical variations in your hip, which isn't very many people, if we say normal hips, that falls in. That says that most people have normal hips, right? Because that's mm-hmm. what normal is. Mm-hmm. But if you fall into the small percentage of people that do have anatomical variations, I urge you to do some warm-up reps with your feet straight ahead, right? Because again, yeah. that's going to do nothing but benefit you. And make sure that your ankle, your tibias, and your hips are heading in the best direction that they can mobility-wise, mm-hmm. right? And then when you start adding weight, you got your weightlifting shoes on, you're doing your squats. If you want to turn your toes out, I like to say no more than 15 degrees, but you know, it depends on how you're looking at it. I'm sure you're not measuring it with,
I'm just looking at it. I probably need to get something out and check it because I will say too, I also am looking at that based on I'm squatting completely barefoot.
Right.
And you are. Yeah. And also because of going to the extreme depth, because I know whenever I used to right. squat with weightlifting shoes on and not go to that extreme depth, I would be 100% straightforward in my feet.
Yep.
So yep. I think like, again, I know that probably with my slight retroversion, I'm one of the smaller percentage people. And again, like you mentioned, it shouldn't be exaggerated, like 30 to 40 degrees out, 45, like that's way excessive.
Yep.
You're often, if that's the case, you're probably making up for, even if you have retroversion, you need to be checking your ankles because yep. oftentimes and your amount of internal hip rotation that you can still improve.
Right.
Because that's
right,
the one thing is that even if we find a variation in your hip anatomy, let's say we find, oh, you've got a good amount of hip retroversion. That mm-hmm. doesn't mean that you just are like, all right, well, I'm done with hip internal rotation
right.
mobility. Because I've rarely ever met someone who is just like, completely found their end range of mobility. Mm-hmm. They would never benefit from any other mobility work. So that person that has hip retroversion, we understand it in saying that, okay, maybe you won't be able to turn your toes in and do, you know, to
right.
a great degree, but
right.
you definitely need to be working your hip internal rotation. And let's look at your ankle mobility and tibial internal rotation, because if we can improve those and there's deficits in those, you're going to be able to see vast improvements in your depth position without having to turn your toes out that great of a degree. So I would say most people, if you have a very wide toe out position, there's likely still a lot we can do mobility wise. Let's not hang our hat mm-hmm. completely that it's retroversion and then that's it. That's all we're not going to do anymore, because there's almost always something that we can continue doing to perfect and, as you would say, sculpt our bottom position to a better.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think that, sculpt the bottom position of your squat. And if you want to learn more about what we're talking about there, go to the blogs that we've been writing, because it's a topic that we touch on or a way that we title it. But I think the big takeaway there with anatomy is that no matter what your anatomy is, with good overall mobility, there is a range of ability that you should have with your feet. Right. And so even if your ideal foot position, your strongest foot position for your squat is with your toes out a little bit, like you still have the ability and the freedom to play with different foot positions, which is good to do in your warmups. And just, you know, it's something that can challenge you and is all encompassing. It's part of your mobility work, part of your warmup work. And, you know, to kind of wrap all this up from my perspective, Aaron, just to give some last minute tips, one for overall ability in your squat to be able to get low and to do that with good quality, along with checking your mobility and working that as needed, warm up barefoot. That means that, you know, maybe eventually I want you to be able to do some of your squat weighted squat sets barefoot. That doesn't mean that you have to squat barefoot the whole time. Although if you have that ability, going through a cycle, as Aaron will tell you, is extremely beneficial to do. But what I'm talking about to start with is just different squat variations that you can do in a general warm-up, like goblet squats, or what I call a support squat, where you're holding onto a rig, you're reaching down close to the ground and pulling your hips forward while you're in that bottom position. Elevated heel air squats or goblet squats to help you get to a deeper position, a more upright position with better quality, and progress out of that, which is another one of the recommendations I want you to leave with. Use progression. Progression means different squat variations that you can progress through with different amounts of elevation, with different amounts of support, holding different amounts of weight out front for a goblet squat. Some people may need to, you know, if we're doing what I call an extended arm goblet squat, where your arms are stretched out and straight, which I think is a beautiful squat warm-up drill that everyone should be using, just because it helps you get in such a better quality position. But I've had some athletes where a 10-pound plate wasn't enough to get them to the depth and quality that I wanted them to. They needed to hold, I mean, it's hard to hold much weight out there, but I could get them to hold, you know, up to like a 15-kilo plate. And now they can only do one rep at a time, but that one rep was way better with that 15-kilo plate, which is 33 pounds, than just the 10-pound bumper plate was. So if you need to use a little bit more weight, but it's again a part of progressing, because I want you to be able to progress down to the ability of executing a full range of motion barefoot air squat, which is really the most difficult squat variation that there is when you're doing what we're talking about, maintaining a good foot position and going all the way down. So, you know, that goes back to what I was talking about before with the 10-minute air squat challenge and holding that bottom position. Well, you may not be ready for that. Like, you may need to elevate your heels, which is an assisted variation of an air squat. Another assisted variation of an air squat is elevated heels holding a plate out front, right? So all those tools and drills that we can use to progress in and out of constantly to help you. So it's like, you know, people are just accepting their squat ability, their squat depth ability, way too quickly, and they're not doing anything about it. Because not only do you have a mobility assessment that you can do, do you have mobility drill protocols that you can follow, you have all these different squat variations and amounts of elevation that you can use to help you learn and develop those better positions. And once you're there, if your mobility is already good, for example, the last recommendation that I'll give is pause in the bottom of your squat for half of your warm-up reps up to about 70%. That goes for overhead squat, front squat, or back squat. Pause on the bottom for 5 to 10 seconds of half of your warm-up reps. It's exactly the protocol that Aaron follows every day when he does a squat, and what he told you he's benefited from. Last thing, you mentioned your YouTube videos. Absolutely go watch those. And something that I haven't mentioned to you yet, Aaron, because you can use these as well to point people towards so many of these drills and more that I've learned from Aaron. I've created demo videos on. They have written instructions on them, and they have most of them have they're narrated as well. I do have that banded tibial rotation drill, and I also have the we've been on this too long. I'm blanking. What is the other tibia drill that we use? The it's one that it's one that's more for when it's actually your mobility and not the awareness.
The one where you're the lateral tibial tilt.
Yeah,
I call it the box and driving the knee out to the
Yeah, side. Yeah, the lateral tibial glide. Also
very helpful for some people. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had someone that had a really bad ankle issue. And so again, when you're getting into the bottom of a squat, the tibia is rotating inwards, but then tilting to the side. So for my exercise science nerds, that's abduction. So it's a lateral tibial glide. So you get down
right.
into the bottom position or foot on a box, and you're literally holding your foot down into a stable position and driving your knee out to the side, which is then tilting that tibia to the side. Yeah, that can be really helpful for some people. And if you see some people's squats, like I know your bottom position looks awesome with that, but like Max Lang also has a really good bottom position where his knees are to the side of his feet. Now, some people always say, oh, well, you know, what's knees too far wide? Well, his foot is still very stable.
Right.
So if your foot is stable and you're getting that tibial rotation, that lateral glide, there's not necessarily an amount that's too much if the foot stays stable. That's just their anatomy allows them to have more lateral tibial tilt. The foot is the first and foremost has to be completely structured and glued to the ground. And if that's there, the knee will go where it needs to as you get down into the squat. That's the big thing that a lot of people, we're not telling you to drive the knee out too far or in, just foot stable, engage the glutes, the knee will go where it needs to.
Yeah, one of my superpowers that I found out not too long ago when I learned about tibial rotation is I've got really good tibial rotation. I can go 45 degrees, and I think what we're calling sufficient is about 20 degrees. So there's a pretty big, pretty excessive amount, which has helped me tremendously and helped me overcome the club foot that I was born with, because my right ankle is still a lot more limited than my left. My left passes the 5-inch wall test easily. And my right, when I'm cold, I'm about 4 inches away from the wall. If I warm up, if I do the banded ankle rock, which is another video that's on my YouTube, then I can get two more inches through that drill. I can take that and the good tibial rotation that I have. But like I said, banded ankle rock, banded hip rock, hip airplane is on there, and a lot of other ones that you and I have, that I've learned from you and from other coaches and PTs in the community as well. And also a lot of the squat variation warm-up drills that I talk about as well are on there. And that's just on the Vaughn Weightlifting YouTube channel, if you guys want to see those in a more of a demonstration type video.
There we go. Well, I think we covered squatting like an Olympic lifter pretty good today. Good hour and so. So again, Chad, thank you so much for coming on the show. And everyone, I mean, you're going to see a lot more content from Chad and I coming out in the next year or two. So be ready for that. If you're into Olympic lifting, it's going to be a good next year. So everyone go follow us on VaughnWeightlifting.com, all the blogs that we've been pumping out, and follow Chad on Instagram at OliChad. And anywhere else, Chad? I think that's a pretty good amount.
And that's pretty much it. That's pretty much where I live. And
there you go.
Absolutely. So greatly appreciate you having me back on, and always thoroughly enjoy talking about weightlifting.
There we go. All right, guys. Until next time, happy squatting. All right, guys, that is it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening. For those of you that want to support the show and all the content I make for Squat University, head on over to patreon.com/squatuniversity. While my day job as a doctor of physical therapy does help support some of the operational costs of creating content for Squat U, I would love to continue growing the brand so that I can make better and better content for you guys. And this is why I created a Patreon page that has different opportunities for you to support Squat University and even have access to some live Q&A meetings with me once a month. If you don't have any extra funds, really don't worry about it at all. My content will always remain free to you to help you decrease pain, move better, and basically optimize your performance in the gym. But if you do want to help support me further in the show and all that I do here, for as little as $1 a month, you can do so. Just head on over to patreon.com/squatuniversity. Again, guys, thank you so much for checking out the show. Until next time, happy squatting.
That's it for today, class, on Squat University by Dr. Aaron Horschig. For more exclusive content, log on to squatuniversity.com.